Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Banti, greetings. Greetings to our listeners as well. Welcome back. What is it today? February 17th? Yeah,
February 17th.
Yeah. All right. Hey Banti, you've traveled a good bit by train. Huh? Like you used to travel across Europe for work and you often... or to Paris and all. So you've traveled by high-speed trains, and then you go to Japan, you with your family. You guys love Japan, and you go to Japan a lot. So I assume you've like done a fair bit of like high-speed rail travel, right?
Yeah. I think high-speed rail travel has a magic of its own. I think Japanese Shinkansens are really good, and I would recommend anybody who wants to see the train game at its best to try the Shinkansens in Japan. Amazing, amazing bits of train. They're like samurai swords on rails. Amazingly sleek operation. The European trains, by comparison, feel much more like the local trains that we have in India. They seem much more sluggish. Obviously India has a few fast trains in its own right. Is there something that we can talk about today on that line, Roy?
Yeah, something very different from the... You said Shinkansen, right? I remember that because when my kid was like little, he just loves trains and used to watch those videos. So I actually know the sounds of those Japanese trains very well through YouTube videos. But so India launched... it was a semi-fast train to begin with, okay.
So as a first of all,
wait a minute,
semi-fast, what does this mean?
Is it
Indian, like, medium-tase?
Yeah, medium-tase, like, you know, medium-fast bowler,
bilkul.
So, medium-tase, so first of all, it's India's fastest, okay? So now by, it's like saying that Venkatesh Prasad is India's fastest bowler at some point of time. Now, this was, true spirit of, like, era of Vande Mataram, Jai Hind, etc. Vande Bharat Express, it broke down one day after launch. So this is a story yesterday, and this is on, I got the NDTV, and I want to just shout out to, it's reported by Alisha Sachdev and edited by Stella Day. India's first engine-less train, Vande Bharat Express, or Train 18, reached Delhi this afternoon, traveling at a much slower speed than what it's not mentioned. It's a semi-high-speed train. I think its maximum speed was 160 kilometers. And what happened is that it was returning from Varanasi after its inaugural run. It broke down about 200 kilometers from the capital around 6 a.m. And I think it broke down at some place called Chamrola Station, yeah. So in an odd kind of way, I mean, I've lived, spent a fair amount of time in North India. I'd never heard of Chamrola, but I'm kind of happy that Chamrola has, it has now made it to the history books. The Railway Ministry, and this has not been a great 2 weeks for the Railway Minister because Piyush Goyal, I think, he was sharing a sped up version of this train on Twitter. And despite being called out, he had not taken the doctored video off. So the Railway Ministry has attributed disruption to a possible cattle run over. But I'll just stop by saying that in as much as this is a signal of or a symbol of Make in India, Modi's much touted program for, galvanizing and catalyzing Indian indigenous manufacturing, it's kind of an apt metaphor for how that hasn't really gone well at all.
Okay, look, we are not in the business of celebrating Indian enterprise. That is not what the tone of this discussion is. On our podcast, as a matter of course, we've regularly done episodes on train travel and vandalism on trains and other such things. I think there was another story that we did a while back, almost a year ago, where a newly trained running from Mumbai to Ahmedabad, the screens were vandalized, etc., which is, how people were using public facilities which were put on for them. We called that out. This one's slightly different, where something that was technically supposed to... So this is not about the people who traveled in the train. We do not know whether they trashed the train inside, but... on the outside, it seems the train didn't work as it should have done. Now, this is both a cause for lament and, probably to the wider point that, why can't we as a country, with so many clever people and such a lot of resources thrown at these things, get these things done in time? Well, much smaller countries, and Japan being one in, a case in point, have got it down to an art form. Obviously, they've been doing it for 50, 60 years, so they probably have done it. But infrastructure remains. The wider point on this is not the train not making it. But India lags in infrastructure and infrastructure spend by like miles. And I think Chandrababu Naidu is one of the few people I have picked up in Indian public life who regularly kind of delivers in advance and delivers on time in on infrastructure spend. Other than that, it's very difficult to spot people in government, whether local, whether at state level or central, who've kind of, you know, delivered bang for buck. I think the Delhi Metro is one exception.
Yeah.
But most of the other infrastructure projects in India are doomed. And I don't know why, because we've got such a kind of glut of engineering. We've got such an engineering fetish. Yeah. And I would imagine that, you know, with so many engineers graduating every year, the last thing that would fall by the wayside is engineered infrastructure projects. So that's my broader point. Obviously, the fact that the train didn't work out, that will probably get picked up and addressed. It's a bit of an embarrassment. It'll get sorted. But the wider point is, why do we have to kind of cock up any and every infrastructure project going?
It's an excellent point. And, you know, you make a really good point that we churn out some, like, massive number of engineers. The sad truth is, like, a large number of them are unemployable. I mean, in terms of technical competence, the best of them, you know, scoot off to companies abroad. And they're, you know, what are they doing? They're basically selling digital ads, right, for Facebook, Google, etc. You know, I'm sure some of them are also, like, doing, you know, cool stuff and so on. And then the ones in India, you know, they go and they basically, you know, will join Procter & Gamble. And after getting an MBA, and then they're not really doing their work in engineering, right? And the whole point behind subsidizing the IITs was that, you know, or the medical colleges, was that people who graduate from these schools would, you know, essentially sort of work for the development of the nation. I mean, my dad's an engineer, and he, you know, he actually took that dictum very, very seriously. but it's a very good point. And I think that these projects are, you know, they're just these sort of massive cash cows, which... everyone and their cousin and uncle can just loot. So, you know, I keep coming thinking of this one thing in Maharashtra. I think it was under the BJP, earlier BJP government, there were 42,000 crores, Manti, that were allocated for an irrigation project. And Every penny of that project has vanished. And there was obvious collusion between, you know, BJP, Shiv Sena and Congress and National Congress Party, probably NCP leaders. And I think Ashok Chavan, maybe, I forget, one, the former chief minister, who's an honest guy, technocrat, who said that, you know, it's very difficult. But to me, like, let's put the politics of it, morality of it aside. How do you make 42,000 crores vanish? So just think of the fortunes that people have made. And not one paisa of that money actually went into anything real. So I think if you look at that as the benchmark, the fact that something got made itself is kind of remarkable. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, the article itself also points out that, so there's the usual blame game and, you know, cattle was blamed. But there's another sort of explanation which says that there was an internal system failure due to a deposit in the wheel. The braking system was jammed. Staff said that because of a mechanical fault in the braking system, the train started making thumping noises when its speed was increased. And the fault then led to the control failures of the air conditioners. So it just sounds like a complete mess, frankly, from beginning to end, because, you know, it may appear very attractive, but if there's so many fundamental problems, obviously it was shabbily done. So, you know, I don't know, like, it's that chalta hai attitude because of which you don't have quality control, or it's, you know, people scrimping on basic safety. You know, I don't know what to, you know, what the
means. Well, look, I think jumping in there, I think there is a reason. So, you know, sometimes people make a massive big deal of this Jugaad culture that operates in Indian businesses and innovation. Well, the Jugaad culture is all right when you're trying to trade your way out of a hellhole, right? Mm. That, you know, you buy something for cheap. So this whole kind of banya mentality that we have, Jugaad culture works very well there. You know, instead of using there are hazard jokes that when India sends spaceship, they don't use pens because they'll use pencil because it can write against gravity. You know, there are lots of low-level jokes, that's Indian Jugaad, etc. Now, my challenge is that maybe in manufacturing, where technology has to work, Jugaad doesn't work because you have to test it. You have to ensure the ingredients or the mechanical bits and bobs are of the best quality. And cutting corners doesn't help. And I think the Chinese are good at it because they've got, you know, basically slave factories running against the backdrop of a gulag. So if you don't bloody do it as you'll be taken straight to a death camp, right? I think as a democracy, we do not have that function. So people sometimes say, China can make a train, why can't you? It's probably because, you know, we're much more benign, softer people. Mm. And we are given partial to kind of cutting corners. So essentially, we've got a trading mindset, which is imposed on a manufacturing, you know, requirement, which to me, that's where the fault line is. If India had to sell its way out of trouble, so it bought skip from China and sold it at a premium, we would like ace it, man, right? Yeah. Dhandabaz is very good, but I don't think this is a case of Dhandabaz. You have to make shit, right? And that's where we fall down.
You know, we actually have like very, very competent engineers of many kinds. We have very competent engineers, like precision engineers, like HMT watches. I mean, you know, I'm a watch nerd. HMT watches are actually sort of fantastic. And on an individual, basis also, or when you look at certain firms, I mean, there's, like, where I'm going with this is, I think there isn't anything in the Indian nature that makes us incapable of doing it. Because when Indians go abroad, they work in these companies and they do fantastic work, right? So there's something, it's more about kind of like a larger environment and culture and a combination of factors. I agree with you about this, like, chalta hai, you know, let's leave it at the mercy of the gods and so on. My dad, at some point of time, like he, among many things, you know, he's a metallurgist, he's an engineer. He also used to, you know, teach on a pro bono basis, and he was also a quality surveyor. So it was his job to essentially certify that a ship or, you know, a system in a steel plant or another kind of, you know, mechanical production system in a factory was basically up to certain quality and safety standards, right? And the thing is that, you know, if my dad didn't sign off on that sheet of paper, then a ship would not basically leave the shipyard or the dockyard and go and sail. So you can imagine that, you know, there were all kinds of incentives. There were people who would, you know, bully, threaten, or, you know, attempt to bribe and all. And my dad was like, do whatever you want, but I'm keeping the ship for three more days. So, you know, that's just the point out here, right? That at every step, like, you basically have so much pressure to compromise on quality. And I think a lot of that also has to do with the fact that if things fail, ultimately there's no real structure or system of accountability in India. I'll end with one anecdote about, I'm no fan of any of the Ambanis, but I remember, I think it was Mukesh Ambani talking about his father, that, when they were building their plant, I think their oil refinery in Gujarat, that's an earthquake-prone area. And, the more severe the earthquake that you have to theoretically anticipate for, the higher really the cost of kind of retrofitting or, you know, whatever, taking preventive measures, earthquake-proofing it. And I think that there was some talk of, you know, should we do a safety kind of, should we take a Richter, scale 5 level earthquake or 6 as the kind of, basis, because it's going to cost more money. And I think there was some internal debate, and Dhirubhai Ambani said, we will do it at 8, which is pretty severe, no debate, no discussion. And I think that's what they did, and in the long run, it saved money, it saved lives, right? So you need to have that kind of, you know, foresight. And at some point of time, when you actually, you know, there's something in our culture which needs to kind of permeate, and people realize this is worth it. I mean, it's the same reason why, you know, people, they live in a building, but they won't want to spend money or give money to the building committee to overhaul the building, to, you know, overhaul the wiring, to make sure that some cracks of concrete from ledges don't fall. They don't want to spend that money, right? Because they can't get an immediate gain. You're absolutely right, the sort of baniya mentality. You have TV nahi milegi. Why should I spend, you know, 1 lakh when I can buy some, like, you know, fancy music system or something?
We talked about this. Look, hopefully the train gets repaired, and in general we start getting our game up in kind of manufacturing and improving our infrastructure piece. Because, you know, as a country, we deserve it. We need good airports. We need good trains. We need good roads, good buildings, good hospitals. And the list goes on. And I think that is where the focus should be, not bloody whether you're, you know, hanging out in a masjid or a mandir.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so let's fold this on that note.
Okay, man. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us, Rohit, and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.